that might have even a more long-term problem. Very cool. And you have to understand the PBX sits in the palm of your hand. That's what's so cool about it all. I will be bringing mine on Sunday, and I suspect maybe Randy will as well, and some others. A couple of mesh devices that you're not used to seeing. Alrighty, anybody have any questions about all this mesh business and the PBXs and things like that? Randy, any more from you?
Nothing more from here. I just wanted to share my excitement and happiness with everybody on the net that we got this thing rolling, and we're going to just expand it at a fairly rapid pace. So anyone's interested in participating in this, you know, please speak up or meet with us and let us know that you'd like to get involved. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra back to K2BAR.
Brady, very good. Thank you very much. Next station, surprise, surprise, is W2LCN with a question.
Hey, good word. Good evening, Gordon and all. This is W2LCN. The name is Rick. Yeah, it's very exciting stuff. The things that Randy's talking about is fantastic. It's just incredible to see it all come together so quickly, and you guys have really pulled your weight putting things together. Randy's been documenting so much that it is fantastic. And the question I have is in line with using the phone. Now, these phones run on 5 volts, and I tried to look up a couple of alternatives to see if we could pull 5 volts off of the Linksys router, which is at 12 volts. And what I came up with is a 7805 voltage regulator chip. It's like a small SCR type thing, but it's a voltage regulator. And there's a few circuits out there to filter it and kind of clean it up a little bit, but it looks like it may pull that through. Now, these phones are only, I think, about 800 milliamps. So I wondered, has anybody got any experience working with these little things? I know someone had spoken about a small set of chips that were great voltage regulators. They were very inexpensive and really robust, but I just don't have the experience with that. I wondered if anybody knew anything about creating a very simple circuit using like a 7805 to be able to pull 5 volts off of a 12-volt power supply that we have to use anyway. So I'll send it back over to the net for any type of reply.
I can speak rather strenuously about them. They require an enormous heat sink if you're going to go from 12 volts to 5 volts. That's the biggest thing you find out, Rick. That's the biggest problem. However, a simple 1-amp switched, switching power supply like the kinds you and I have pigtailed before. You stick them in your accessory off socket, formerly known as a cigarette lighter plug, in a car, and they give you a USB port. Those are probably a better bet. Just for reference, I know I told you and Randy this, and I think Gary, but tell everybody else. These phones sip so little. Or I hate to use that word sip that way, but anyway, they take so little current at 5 volts that you can run them off the USB port of your laptop or your netbook if you have the computer associated with your phone and that whole workstation. You can actually then just power the phone from a pigtail that's a USB-B, that's the normal rectangular USB port, to a little, I think it's a 2.1, I'm not sure exactly, but it's a circular coaxial power connector that's on the back of the phone, and that'll run the Grand Stream phones just fine. The Cisco phones, regrettably, if you do get them, you must plan on throwing at least 36 volts on them. I'm running one with 38 volts, and that's fine, but it really wants to see 48 volts, but it will perform just fine at 36 volts, just fine. So keep that in mind. I haven't tried it at 30 because I just don't have the capacity, but that's something to think about as well. So, anybody else?
How much
do you need at 38 volts, Gordon, and 2 NVR?
About an amp or less.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, they don't require much. I was very fortunate. A friend of mine got me a development kit for a TI chip, and that's essentially off the shelf. Will take in 12 volts or thereabouts. I'll take in a lot less. I'll take a bit more, and it'll output 38 volts the way it's set up right out of the barrel. But you know, I can by changing a couple of resistors, I can change the input and output voltages on this board or that chip, and it works great. Well, very exciting stuff, and that's how I was able to bring up my my SIP phone real fast. In fact, or my Cisco phone, I should say. One of the things I need to do, Gary, before I hand you these phones, is to meet Woody, AK2F. He's got a 48-volt power supply for me that will run a bunch of these phones just fine. So that way we can set up a test bed and not have to worry about how much current we're pulling. We can just set up a 48-volt bus when we're using Cisco phones. The other thing is you just go spend the $7 or $8, or maybe it's as much as 15, for the plug-in for the AC power supply for the Cisco phones. You have to, it's a cable where you plug it in the wall and you plug a little coaxial connector in the back and it puts 48 volts on the phone and you're done. So there's a thousand ways to skin this cat, okay?
I'm not worried about that at all. KD2DDK.
Okay, very good. All right. Anybody else? Rick, you have any more?
No, I think that pretty much covered it. You kind of nailed it right away with the heat sink issue. I was wondering why this hadn't come up before as an option. Now I know. But yeah, I just want everybody to know it is pretty exciting seeing this stuff operate. And I'm hoping to be able to get this out maybe during field day or some other activity. So you should take a look at it. It's really a pretty neat feature to be able to take part of our band that we can work with and do so many things. I mean, we can pass video and all sorts of other things. The other night I turned on one of the nodes to go look at a few things, and I realized my son had set up a system upstairs and plugged in the phone and got everything up and running, and lo and behold, I decided to dial it. And you know, the next thing you know, I hear my son yelling, "Hey, Dad, you know, how do I answer the phone?" And I can hear the phone upstairs ringing. The call quality was fantastic. I was playing with a 3-axis camera at the same time, and it was really pretty incredible to think of running that all over things we all have access to. So it was really pretty exciting stuff. I will send it back over to Ned. I have nothing else for you. This is W2LCN.
That's great. That's absolutely super. All right, very good. And I want to point out to everybody that Rick's oldest son is 5 years old. Be very afraid, everybody. He won't be on the air soon enough, that boy. He's going to be asking a lot of questions. All right. Thank you very much, Rick, for your input as well, and also your facilitation of these Grandstream phones. They're kind of neat. All right. WITW. Mr. Steve, your question, sir. K2BAR.
K2BAR, WITW. Well, two things. One is just an informational thing. I recently completed my first surface mount project. I built a little two-band transceiver by Steve Weber, KD1JV, called the Mountain Topper. It's a very compact design, uses really tiny parts, and will fit in an Altoids tin. I built it for 20 and 40 meters, and it'll put out 2 watts with a 9-volt battery, 3 watts with a stiff 9-volt supply, and 5 watts with a 12-volt supply. Built-in message keyer, 3 memories, RIT, really nifty. So I'm looking forward to doing some SOTA activations with that coming up. After opening it up and looking at how small the parts were, I did a double take and said, gee, am I really going to be able to build this? But I took my time and I got the right tools for the job. I got a bright incandescent light bulb in a lamp. I got a white towel, a bath towel that I put on my my workbench, and I built the kit about 12 inches in from the edge. I used a really, really fine tweezer that I got in a drugstore for like $26 that has a really fine point, and I used that to pick the parts up with. And then a very, very thin pencil point type temperature-controlled digital soldering iron, and the kit came with some really fine solder, which was really nice. I need to find out what solder that is because I want to get some. And the other thing was a magnifier, one of these head magnifiers that had the flip-down magnifiers to increase the strength. And just took my time with it, and it came out great. Powered up first time, no mistakes, everything worked. I was really thrilled and amazed at the same time that it actually worked. Those parts really are small. So that's been my ham radio fun for a little bit. What I'm looking for now is about 75 feet of Cat5e plenum rated networking cable, if anybody's got a line on some of that. The application is to take, split it open and take, there's four twisted pair of wires inside, and three of them are made out of Teflon. And Teflon has really low RF loss characteristics, so I'm planning on using one pair as a transmission line for a lightweight segmented dipole or even a lightweight trap dipole. I want to use that for feed line. It has a characteristic impedance of somewhere around 100 ohms, and it's very low loss. So I've just been unable to find it in my current circle of junk and local friends. So if anybody's got about 75 feet, it has to be plenum rated Cat5e. So that's going to be used with this FDR on some portable operations. Back to that, K2BAR WITW.
Okay. That's good. That's very good. I don't know if the cable I have is plenum rated. Randy, do you have any plenum rated cable? Randy may have stepped away. I can check. So, are you going to be ripping the 75 feet of cable out of that bundle, or are you going to leave it inside the bundle with the other three pairs?
I'm going to be taking it out just for the purposes of keeping it really low weight. That's the object of the exercise. From a loss RF loss standpoint, it compares very favorably with RG58 cable. So that's the reason. I mean, I could go with RG174, but the losses are significantly higher. So trying to keep every bit of the 5 watts I have getting to the antenna. So yeah, I'm going to be taking it out of the jacket.
Well, keep in mind that the Cat5 cable is usually solid. Is it usually? Yeah, let me think about that. No, it's actually stranded. So that actually should work. I was worried about it being solid and therefore breaking after repeated operations. So yeah, as long as the conductors are stranded, I think you'll be fine. That's pretty cool. So 100 ohm, balanced transmission line. And you just use a 2-to-1 balun at the bottom and you're done?
Or not. I mean, the loss would be, not that great. Also, if you cut it for exactly a half wavelength of the band you're going to operate on, then the impedance repeats. So it really doesn't matter what the impedance of the transmission line is. And the plenum-rated cable is, in fact, solid conductor, so I will have to keep an eye on that and see how it holds up over time. It's an experiment. One of the guys on the North American Soto list or the KX3 list is playing with it. V0H, I think. Myron is his name. So I've been following his work in this area.
And I'm just wondering, what's the impedance of the stranded stuff?
Yeah, it's not the impedance that's the issue. It's still around any twisted pair of like that of that gauge is going to be somewhere around 100 ohms. It's the loss of the PVC jacket or the other. There's some other insulating materials that they use. That's where the loss factor comes in. It's the low loss of the Teflon that makes it desirable.
Okay, so if I can find stranded but Teflon, that might be better.
It would, but I don't know of a source for that, and I don't think they make Cat 5, you know, the Cat 5 stranded stuff doesn't have Teflon, as far as I know.
Let me research that a bit. Okay, good. Very, very good. Anybody else have any thoughts? Steve, you're not running 100 feet of this stuff, are you? I mean, how much are you really running? You run like 30 feet of it, maybe? 50 at the most?
Yeah, 56 feet would be the target.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the losses are even ignorable at that point, even for the PVC. Just trying to think who we have. Might have a way to sweep that and find out. Let me see what we can come up with, but I can make some phone calls and see what gives.
Okay, thanks, Gordon. Appreciate it. WITW.
You're very good. It's excellent. That's really cool. What a great idea. Absolutely great idea. To use cat wire as balanced transmission line. Alrighty. Are there any other questions or comments for the net? I think we got them all. Yeah, I think we did, but forgive me if I missed anybody. Let's try that again. Anybody else?
N2NVR?
Yes, John, go right ahead.
I was just curious as to how you get to ignore the impedance. I have some platinum coaxial downstairs that the cable company no longer needed, and that holds out, I'm sure, at 75 ohms. But if you go around the corner with that stuff, even with that stuff, with any coax, as far as the digital cable is concerned, if you go around the corner too tightly, it changes the impedance. But if whatever system you have there doesn't care about that, then I would be interested in knowing how you get to that, on one end or the other or both.
Okay, so let's think about this. This is a QRP rig with a pretty flexible output network. So, it obviously is ideally set up for 50 ohms, but if it's got a broad enough matching capability on the output to come close to 100 ohms, then it's going to be pretty efficient in, putting the RF into the transmission line. And if it's a multiple of a half wave at the feed point, or from the feed point to the radio electrically, then and the SWR of the actual radiator is good, then you're all set.
Okay, interesting. Because I've heard of people trying to use cable for RF, in other words, stranded cable for coaxial purposes, and I was often curious. It was just very confusing, because how do you worry about loss of cable because with coaxial cable, of course, all the manufacturers they have to be very specific about what their losses are, especially if it comes to something, for example, like 174, as opposed to, some other high efficiency type coax.
Oh, yeah, no, I got you. The key thing to think about is that there's two components that combine to give you loss, right, in a transmission line. One is the resistive element, and the other one is the complex
reactances, or complex impedance components, the reactances, the inductive and capacitive reactants. And the type of insulation used, the the twist, if any, of that cable, and all that, all factor in to that calculus.
Take a look at Myron's webpage, or his blog. Just do a Google search for WV0H blog, and scroll around. You'll see some, I don't know what exactly month, but there's only a handful of entries. You should be able to find it. And he goes into the engineering details. There was a calculator on a VK's website, VK1OD, Owen, I can't think of his last name, but anyway, unfortunately he's taken his website down, but he had a calculator for figuring out the loss based on insulation and length and twist and stuff. Did his work with that, and he's been using this plenum rated line very successfully. So I just thought I would copy his work, since he did all the hard engineering work.
Okay, is that Whiskey Bravo Zero Hotel or Whiskey Victor Zero Hotel?
Whiskey Victor Zero Hotel.
Okie dokie. Very good. Good to know.
It's Whiskey Victor Zero Hotel .blogspot.com.
Okie doke. Very good. Anybody else? Okie dokie. All right. Well, are there any other things you'd like to add to this, Steve?
No, that's it, Gordon. Thanks, and enjoyable net as always. And congrats to you and Randy and the other folks involved with the mesh networking. Sounds like you're making a lot of progress and having a lot of fun at the same time. WITW.
Okay, well, we have a surprise coming soon, and that will allow a lot of people to get involved, even if we don't have RF connectivity. We're working on that, too, and we're going to discuss that more in the next couple of weeks. So be aware of that, that there's more fun to be had. Alrighty. Anybody else have any questions or comments for the net? Right, real quick, Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, are you available after the net, K2BAR?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, sir. I want to continue, so I'm in the process of typing in the last of the things into the administration panel. I want to make sure I got this right. Alrighty, thank you very much. Well, I want to thank everybody tonight for their participation in the net. It's been rather diverse, to say the least, as always. I think we had 16 or 17 of us on the net, and like nine, made comments and suggestions or had questions. It's just marvelous. So I want to thank everybody for their participation. That's just absolutely wonderful. In any case, I want to thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. And again, if anyone wants to go to the brunch on Sunday, we'd love to see you there. It'd be a great time. Meet a great group of folks. And we're going to be at the 76 house in Japan at 11 in the morning, which means I got to get my tail out of bed and go to 9 o'clock Mass, but that's all right. And it's a busy day, and I'll see everybody at the Barra meeting. Oh, one other thing. The Barra meeting will be Sunday night at the Washington Township Municipal Complex in the Senior Citizen Room there. And it is show and tell night, so bring your favorite stuff and be prepared to talk on it for a couple of minutes and answer some questions. So I know we will be doing that this weekend, no doubt. And Randy, once I get this thing running, we should plan on having one or more systems ready to rock and roll on Sunday with not just the phones, but maybe a chat server and a web server and stuff like that. We can really do it up. I'm going to make sure that because of the way that room's laid out, that I bring, let's say, I'll bring out like a 35 or a 40 ampere hour battery, and I'll run things off of a 12 volt source as best I can for the purposes of the demo. That way I don't need to be plugged in. The only thing I'm going to have to solve is the issue of the ubiquity stuff, but I figure we can put that across the room somewhere else near a power outlet and just bring a strip for those. But we don't actually have to connect stuff directly to them if we don't want to, or if we could, we just put a phone on it remotely. That'd be a hoot, too. All right. 7-3 all. Again, if anyone wants to come to the brunch on Sunday, love to see you, and I'll see you at the Barron meeting on Sunday night. And it's a busy day Sunday. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stops that day from...
Repeater. Repeater. Timeout. Clear.
Man, I got a little long-winded there. So anyway, thank everybody for the use of the repeater, and we'll see you later. All right. God bless everybody, and we'll see you on Sunday, either at 11 for the Chestnut Ridge brunch, or at 7 for 7:30 for the Barra meeting at Washington Township. Take care, and God bless. W2TTT.
KD2FLG disconnected.
Hey, W2SW2TTT. So a couple of things come to mind if you're there.
U2S is here.
Okay, so from step 1A, I grabbed the IP address. I have not renamed my PBX RAS PBX because I don't know if we want every PBX to be RAS PBX right now, but I can come back to that if I need to. Tell me, let's first of all, I have that IP address, and I also have the Wi-Fi address, although I'm trying to figure out why I need the Wi-Fi address.
You need the Wi-Fi address in there because, and I'm not looking at the setup at the moment, but you need that in there to, in effect, route stuff across the broadband hamnet, and it needs to know where the rest of that is.
Okay, gotcha.
At least I think so. Now, that may be overridden by the fact that later in the process, I just identified the entire Class A 10 network. So you got to consider the order in which I went through discovering this stuff. So I would leave it for now. And what we can do is, in testing, back out one parameter at a time and see if it fails.
Yeah, we doubled, I'm sorry. So, in step 3E, when I'm entering the local network site, that's the wired port of the server, right?
In step 3E, the local networks, is that the field you're looking at?
Yeah, is that the Wi-Fi IP, or is that the one of the server plugged into this router?
Yeah, no, that's the LAN port, the wired one, and then that's also the one where, in the instructions on the printed page I got you, the instruction ends at the bottom of one page and continues on the top of the next, and then the second part of that instruction is to add another local networks field and put the entire Class A 10 network in there.
Yeah, okay. And, alright, so I've done the mask, things like that. I'm turning NAT to NO, right?
Turning what to NO?
NAT?
Oh, yes, NAT is NO. NO is NAT.
I'm trying to remember if that's going on. Alright, let's see. Alright, so I've gone, done that. That's a static IP.
when I flip the page, so IP and netmask fields, local, wait, is that the local networks is, wait a minute. Alright, so, I see, so when I add the hold on. Noel, if you're listening, I'm trying to do something. I can't look at the phone right now. Are you still on the Echo Link? I think he disconnected from the net, and all of a sudden he's been texting me like a banshee. It's like, good Lord. All right. So on the external IP, I put that in, the wired IP. Do I put the netmask slash the network mask on that line?
Give me a second. I'd have to go over and look at it. I don't have that all in front of me here in the shack. If there's a separate, if you need to put the netmask only if there's a netmask field, and if I recall, the only places that need for a netmask appears is in the local networks plural field.
Right. Okay. Then you have that in your instructions. That's what is ambiguous. So first enter the IP and netmask of the RASP PBX. Well, no, actually, you just enter the IP. There is no netmask field for that. The next one is local networks, and that's the one where it's 10.0.0, and with a netmask, it's actually predefined as 255.255.255.0. So I think we got that.
Yeah, but just as a precaution, when you're specifying the entire Class A 10 network, the net mask should be wider, so there should only be one octet that says 255, and the three lower order octets are 000.
I got that. Very, very nice. Very, very nice. Okay. Hold on. Okay. All right. So, let's see. Yeah, you're right. I fixed that. So, that's good. And then, everything else remains as default, so I guess I should save that at some point and go from there. Hold on. Okay. Yeah, so we doubled before. You're saying I should go back and change the system name to RASP PBX?
You can, you know, change it to whatever you like, and then you also, you know, make sure that that's whatever host name you choose is what's being used for the advertised service. But now when we doubled, I also was referring to the notion of how I originally, in the local networks field, I originally put the IP address of the RASP PBX, and then somewhat later, after subsequent testing, I added the second local networks field, and that's where I put the Class A 10 network. Now, what I suspect is that what really got things to work the way it was is just defining for the PBX that the internal network it's talking on and all the phones are on is that Class A 10 network, and of course we could make that smaller if we wanted, but and I suspect that having an IP address for the PBX itself may not be necessary, but I haven't tested that, and so that's why I was saying, or was trying to say that just follow the instructions I have given you, even though I suspect there is some redundant or unnecessary information in there currently. We'll figure that out over the next few weeks, with some more experimenting and removing one variable at a time. But since
this configuration I know works. Let's stick with that, get it running, and we can tweak it later.
That's fine. Yeah, okay. So that makes good sense. Now, let's see. As far as applying the red, you know, config button, I did that already. And so I've just got a few more steps to go. And I do want to reboot this thing because I also wiped out the memory and all those fun things. So if you're going to be around for a couple of minutes, let me just quickly whip through the rest of these. If I have any questions, I'm going to get back to you, okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I'll be around. In fact, I know I've got a handy talkie around here somewhere that little Baofeng, so I may just grab that up and then I can wander over to the lab and sit there with the HD on and we can talk that way. And just for giggles, I was talking to KD2ENV earlier this evening and pointed out that you can apply custom ringtones to these particular phones, and that got him all interested because of his audio engineering. We talked about having him fix some up, so I wouldn't be surprised if he pulls something out of the air here in the next few days and we burn it into one of the phones. And, my favorite, of course, I told him, and he will do it if he can figure it out, is definitely something from Spinal Tap. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra.
I need to do the administration of the phones. That's downstairs. I have no phones up here, which is kind of ironic, but that's the fact. So what I'm going to do is, do the light fantastic and jump up and down. So you want me to call you here on 442, which is better for an HD for you?
Since I've got that silly Baofeng HT and 442's got birdies on it, probably here would work better if you think it'd be okay.
That's fine. All right, so let me ask one question about the extensions. The extensions were the SIP IDs minus the leading digit, and then the caller ID field you just set up the way you described to me the other day with your call sign hyphen and then the whole SIP ID.
When you're setting up the extensions, when you're setting it up, the extension number that you initially give it is whatever you give it. And so I just happen to use four-digit numbers, completely arbitrary. So that's like one of the extensions is 5101, and another is 4101, and another is 5129. So it's whatever I happen to pick. I don't think it makes any difference. I think there was it may take as few as one digit, but again, I haven't experimented with that.
Yeah, okay, I gotcha. When you did your extensions, you have two appearances on your phone, so you went through this process twice per phone if you wanted to essentially have the same extension name and things like that on the phone twice?
Yeah, I don't know if... I suppose you can put the same extension on the phone twice, because you have on those phones you have two account numbers, but as I recall, you only put the extension no matter how many times you use it, only once in the PBX. So as I recall, each extension must be unique.
Oh, okay. Okay, so in the PBX they have to be unique. In the phone they can be they can be redundant.
I believe so, yes.
Okay, and that, what that will do is that allows someone to call in on the other appearance while you're on that same extension.
Maybe. That's put that on your list of things to try.
Golly gee, Uncle Randy. Yeah, okay, that sounds good. So my extensions are 421 through 424, so I'm going to make it 421. I'll display name just for, because I know there's a space issue, is I'm just going to make it Tango 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 421, hyphen 421. That way it'll fit. And then display alias, caller ID alias, I'm going to do the whole call sign thing like you did. So W2TTT hyphen 421. And the SIP alias, what is the SIP alias?
The SIP alias I don't believe displays, but it will appear in the, if you're doing SIP debug, or it will appear in the logs. And the SIP alias is just, again, another name for whatever that extension is. And those must be unique across the entire PBX. So let's say you had two different extensions on one particular phone. If you wanted to give a SIP alias to each of those extensions, they have to be different. So it might be... And the SIP alias for extension one is WU2S-A, and the second one is WU2S-B, or something, anything that might make the SIP alias unique.
Okay, very good. So on the extensions options, you didn't put anything on there, right?
I don't remember which. I don't think so. What options are you referring to?
There's an extension options field in the PBX.
Oh, yeah, no, there's nothing in there. That just remains blank.
Okay. So in the outbound caller ID, it's the same thing. I'm going to do the call sign hyphen the extension number.
Yeah, that seems to be a reasonable thing to do, and of course it appears very nicely on the phone before you answer the ring.
Yep. And just trying to think what else I have to do. Got to roll down to the secret, I guess. And we certainly don't want to use that string. That's the default, that's for sure.
Well, you know, at some point we might. I can think of a few reasons why we might. You know, it just... generated. Of course, the deal there then is that under the current conditions, you just have to cut and paste it to the phone, you know, which is would not be overly tedious if you had a couple of browser windows open and you know, you just flip from one to the other. You know, ultimately, you might want to if we put it in some sort of directory. We could do it that way, but yeah, for this level of this stage of our existence, I think just keep everything simple the way we discussed on the weekend, and probably make them all the same. This way, you're guaranteed to get all your phones up and running.
Yeah, am I crazy? But I don't need the IP address for this administration, do I?
The IP address for what administration?
For the phone itself.
No, you don't, because it could be anywhere as far as the PBX is concerned. The phone needs to know where the PBX is, because that's what's going to initiate the whole sequence of events.
Okay, so it says, please enter a valid caller ID alias, must be a valid number. So apparently my outbound caller ID of call sign and the extension works fine, but it did not like my my call sign there. as a caller ID alias is not just Stink. So I have to come up with something else. I guess it's got to be all numeric, huh?
Yeah, for that one it is. I think I just made it the same as the extension number.
Yeah, which is what I just did. So yeah, I can if I can add a couple of extensions up here and then head downstairs, I can actually test them. All right, let me add two more, or three more, and then go downstairs and make noise. I'll reboot this thing, make sure it's working. So I'll call you from the downstairs shack in a few moments, all right? Maybe 5 or 10 minutes?
Yeah, that'll be fine. So WU2S will be standing by.
W2S, TTT. Off the clear for now. Thanks.
And I've been listening, following along, and taking notes.
Excellent, Gary. Did you get the, I believe I sent you the notes in both a Word doc and a rich text file the other day. Can you confirm that you got that from me?
Oh, yes. I have them open in front of me. I've been following along with your discussion, taking some notes on a piece of scrap paper. I have Asterisk up and running. Sometime after Friday this weekend, I'm going to make it a point to run and try and collect a couple phones so I can plug them in. Gordon says he has Cisco phones. He mentioned something about dumping them at your house, but I don't know where you live. Rich has got a couple of the Grand Stream to lend. So we're ready to go as soon as I plug in some phones, I guess. Go ahead, Randy. Do what you need to do. I just wanted to let you know I was interloping on it and taking notes.
Good. Okay, Gary. Yeah, that's terrific. Thank you. I'm glad you were or are. And yeah, as you come up with things, you know, shoot me back. You know, when you get the moment, shoot me back any corrections or things that you find in that first draft of the instructions that were confusing or just wrong or whatever, because it is just a very rough first draft. I was just trying to excitedly get it out to the group as quickly as I could with something that I was at least confident it was about 90% correct, and you know, we could muddle through the remaining 10% to get the whole system up and running. So I do want to get this corrected with all of your help. And then we can post that, and then we can just then other people should be able to just fairly easily, you know, get a complete system up and running with very little fuss without having to worry about all the, you know, the confusion and the noise and the setup thing there. So yeah, thanks for listening in, Gary.
That's what you get for using a what do they call them, party lines? Remember party lines? Anyway, yeah. So Gordon's got the clock running on 10 minutes for you. You better hit the head before he starts calling you back. He has no phone upstairs in his shack. There's the first practical purpose. KD2DDK.
Excellent advice on all counts. I think I will take your advice, Gary. This is Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra. I will be back in a moment.
W2TTT, I'll be back in a moment. W2S, W2TTT. Partial good news. You're a little noisy, but, I'm getting the number you have dialed is not in service. So that means my phones are talking to the PBX. That's the good news. But I put in 3-digit extensions, so I have a funny feeling that the SIP ID needs to match one of those fields that I put a 421 into. It says it needs to be 5421, for instance.
Hold on.
I'm not copying. You're holding the repeater, but your signal's got so much egg fry on it, and your audio is so low, I'm not catching any of the words.
Well, no.
Not really. Let me call you on the phone. W2TTT.
are. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rocky. How's it going? Cold enough for you?
Yeah, you got that right. I thought you were going to work today.
No, I took the day off. I took the day so I could get a good night's sleep and make the ride up to Vermont and get there early in the morning. I mean, early in the morning. Get there while it's still daylight, because I have a feeling they got about a foot of snow for that Wednesday storm that we had. So we're going to have to do a little shoveling to get to the door, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood you. I thought you were going in and said you were leaving when you get home. God, had me worried this morning. I was hoping to God nothing happened.
No, okay. No, sorry about that. I know originally I was going to do that when I thought we were having a storm on Monday. I didn't want to take today off and then have to be off on Monday as well. But now that we're not getting anything big on Monday, I decided to take today off. That way we're, you know, I'm nice and rested. We can hit the road a little bit earlier. You know, and I won't fall asleep halfway up there.
That was a great idea on your part, since it's going to be a little bit of a family outing there. It would be nice to be awake for them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I wanted to get up there, you know, during the daylight, be able to, you know, do some shoveling. I don't know how much shoveling we're going to have to do, but who the hell knows? You know, when they plow up there, I'm hoping they didn't plow the driveway in. But we're going to bring a shovel with us and hope for the best.
Oh, very good. Have a good time, that's for sure. When are you going to be back to work?
Monday morning.
I guess it's a well-deserved 3 days off, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Not to mention, I'll work a week and then get a vacation week off. We'll do some local stuff. Maybe go out to Sag Harbor for the day, visit my aunt. I haven't seen her in a while. She hasn't seen my son in just as long. So, you know, we'll do a few things. Get some work done around the house, relax, check into some nets.
N1LU, KD2BOR. You know, I got home yesterday. I packed everything up. The only two items I don't have packed right now is Debbie brought me two nice boxes home to put each of the M575 M6s in.
Oh, okay. Well, if you ever need boxes, I got a million of them.
I went to two different post offices yesterday. Yeah, some of their boxes are good, but they had nothing large enough for the 2000, and they had nothing large enough for the Lafayette 1.